In today's episode, we get to find out why Berkhamsted Pre-Prep was named Pre-Prep School of the Year. We speak to Debbie Cooper. Let's get into this episode right now.
This is the Berkhamsted Spotlight, the podcast showcasing the remarkable Berkhamsted school community. Each episode, we speak to students, staff, and alumni to bring you their insights. Come with us as we get into this episode right now.
Debbie, welcome to this episode of the School Podcast. Thank you for being here. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Yes, the sun is shining and we've got an Easter bonnet parade at school at the moment. So the children have all arrived in their Easter bonnets ready for an Easter parade later on today. So
fantastic. Easter bonnet and sunshine is a very important time of the year in that case. Debbie, tell me a little bit about, first of all, about yourself and about your role at Berkhamsted Pre-Prep. I mean, how long have you worked there for?
I am currently the head of Stepping Stones, which is the nursery class, so the head of year there. I've worked for Berkhamsted School for over 25 years now and taught mainly early years during that time. So I'm passionate about early years education and the things that it does and improves the chances for children. So really passionate about it.
Gosh, that's amazing. 25 years. It must be something about, well, something about the school, but something about working with young children as well that you really enjoy. What is it about young children that you enjoy working with them?
Oh, it's just the fun, the opportunity, the engagement that they have, the things that they do during the day, that we have so much fun, but just how much they learn as well during those early years and how important those early years are to them. And to their development in later life. It's just amazing that the things they learn in such a very short space of time in our early years.
I love that. I really do. So Debbie, just for the sake of anyone listening to this who maybe doesn't really understand what the pre-prep department looks like, could you just talk us through it? Just describe it for us and what kind of things happen in there?
Yes, so pre-prep runs from 3 to the age of 7. So we've got from nursery here. We've also got a day nursery, which starts from 6 months, which is before they arrive at the pre-prep. The pre-prep starts from 3. They start with us in Stepping Stones. They then move on to reception, year 1 and year 2. We're on a beautiful site that's just outside Berkhamsted, so just out in the kind of countryside. We've got the most amazing walled garden and woodland. It's a really wonderful place to work and to learn. As you drive up the drive, we've got an avenue as we drive up in the morning, and the daffodils are out at the moment, and it just looks spectacular as you drive up the drive. So we're slightly out of town, but a really lovely place to play and enjoy childhood.
Debbie, it certainly sounds like you really enjoy your workplace as well as the children that you're working with there as well. Tell me about how you go about ensuring that you're providing a kind of a nurturing and supportive environment for the young people in the pre-prep.
So we've done a lot of research into play and how important play is in the early years. There's a lot of research out there, how much children develop through play and play opportunities. So in our pre-prep and in our nursery, we've really developed our play over the last few years, developing how children use play, and the brain growth in early years is huge. So we've done a lot of research into brain growth and brain development and how we can enhance that brain development through play, looking at how we can make sure that the children have lots and lots of opportunities to really grow their brain. And that's what we do every day. We grow children's brains. And we use that, particularly in the nursery, we use play to do that. And research says that children grow more neurons in their brain through play. So we do so many lovely activities and things for the children to do that are play-based. This term we've been talking about, play is our superpower with the children. And we've done some parent talks as well. So I've talked about with parents about how important play is. Play is kind of undervalued, I think, a lot of the time. People think it's a bit frivolous and something, but it's so necessary for child development. So we've done some talks for parents and given them little leaflets about what the children are actually doing when they're playing. And we've invited them in to see them playing and then talked about them, about what the skills that they were learning while they were playing and how we enhance those skills and develop the skills to make them become really good learners at the end.
I love that idea of inviting parents in so they can see the children playing as well. Tell me a bit more about this brain growth. What kind of skills do the children develop through play?
So many. I mean, there's probably so many skills. So this term, the superhero that we've been doing, and we invited the fire engine in, Berkhamsted Fire Engine, in this week. So we've been talking about fire and the importance of the superheroes that put out fire and things like that. So the children have absolutely adored that topic. I mean, having fire engines in has really sparked their learning and sparked their imagination. So an example of an excellent play-based activity that happened was that the children were building a tower. And we've got kind of blocks that are kind of probably about shoebox block size that all fit on top of each other, plastic blocks. And they had them outside and they built a tower. And then obviously the tower was taller than they were. And so they had to come up with a solution as to how they could make that tower taller. So they started to find things that they could climb on to get it a bit higher. Then they started to get other children involved. So they went and found the tallest child in stepping stones to come, because they realised that they were actually going to get it higher. And then they found a teacher and they said, we need a ladder. We need a ladder. We can't get any higher now. And this happened over a series of days. And each day they kind of built and we got some step ladders out, and risky play, obviously, developing there. There's a lot that I'll talk to you about risky play in a minute, because there's a lot that needs to happen around risky play. But it's the kind of developing those skills that there was collaboration in there. They had to talk. They had to manage risks to build this tower. They had to work on the skills that they'd already learned. So the math skills in there were just amazing, that how many skills just building a tower was growing those neurons in the brain, making the connections, making the links to all those subjects that they're going to do in later life. But unless you've experienced it in a concrete way, you're not going to then be able to do it in an abstract way when you come to maths and things like that. So communication and language skills as well was key to that, because they had to be able to communicate with their friends to get them to come and help, because they needed help. And then again with staff as well, because they needed the ladder, and the ladder was out the back, so somebody had to go and get the ladder for them. So
see, I love the way that it's not just mathematical, it's not just physics that they're developing here, but also those social etiquette skills as well, it sounds like.
Yes, and humour is massive. I've read an article on humour and how much we use humour in every day, and that really starts around 3 or 4. They don't quite understand humour at 3 and 4, but they're starting to develop it, what a key skill that is. And, you know, you use humour every day, probably hundreds of times a day, just in your general life, and how important that is, and how that develops as well, and how they need to kind of understand that kind of communication language, the serve and return conversations that you have to have reading other people to get that, develop that humour.
I guess it's exactly what we're doing now. Debbie, tell me something about risky play that you mentioned a few minutes ago.
Risky play is really interesting at the moment. The children we've got in Stepping Stones at the moment were COVID, most of them born either just pre or just post COVID. And the first 18 months of their life, everyone wore a mask and stood 1.5 to 2 metres away from them. And they didn't have the same experiences that children have had previously or have had again since. And so we really found that this particular year group are slightly risk averse. So there's the kind of, mustn't do that, you know. So we've had to really develop that into the activities that we're doing, for example, the step ladders, for example. And risk is really important, that they take risks early on. You know, walking on that little brick wall that you fall off, graze your knee. You need to learn how to fall when you're a child, so that actually when you get to an adult, you know how to fall, or how to not fall, indeed. So risky play is a really big thing. We take them out into the woods and we do risky play. We climb the trees and build dens and all those kind of things as well. So, developing risks, and that's slightly missing in this. So just bridging that gap.
Do you think that parents today, I mean, I'm not thinking of any particular parents at Berkhamsted Pre-Prep, but do you think that parents today in general tend to parent their children in a less risky way? And just, we often talk about that generation of children being the snowflake generation. Do you think that that's as a result of parents being too cautious with their children?
I think it is. I think there is that, that children don't go out and play anymore. You know, when I was younger, I used to go out and play outside. And children don't do that so much. They are much more controlled. And, you know, rightly so, parents are concerned and worried. A parent myself, I don't, you know, I need to know where my daughter is at certain times. So, but I think it is just stepping back. And when they're at the top of the slide in the park, not going, oh, be careful, you know, because immediately that makes them think, oh my goodness, there might be a risk here, I might fall off. And you, by saying that, you know, that you're immediately kind of making them think, oh my goodness, there must be a risk. Mummy's saying, I've got to be careful at the top here. So it's, and we talk to our parents about not saying be careful, and if you go and stand in any park, the number of times you probably hear be careful or don't do that or oh, watch what you're doing is, and they build from that. They're copycats. Children copy. That's how they learn. So if somebody suddenly put a shocked face on or a worried face, they pick up on that.
Much here for us all to be learning, I think. Yeah, Debbie, could you describe what a typical day at school looks like in the pre-prep department?
Yes, in the nursery particularly, it's all about play. So children come in, they play. We do free flow play, so inside and outside play, all weathers. So if it's raining, we put our coats on and we go out and play. Every time, they're always playing. So they play inside and outside. Sometimes we go to the woods. We do activities in the woods, so we're really lucky here to have our own woodland environment where the children can go and put our wellies on. We get muddy, we get dirty, but we have a great time, and the benefits of playing outdoors are huge. You know, the mental health and well-being benefits of playing outside for children and adults. Being outside is massive, but also developing those gross and core, those gross motor skills, fine motor skills, the pulling. They build dens and things like that in the woods. We have campfires in the woods, that kind of thing, and the, you know, kind of just dragging a log, the effort that required to drag a log is so important for their physical development later on in life. Lots of research into heart health at the moment and how that is developed in children under the age of five. So early childhood is where you develop your heart health, your bone health, your lung capacity. And that all happens in early years and probably up to seven. And you can't go back and redo that. So if you've not built that strength and capacity in early years, and that needs to happen outside, the running, the chasing, all those activities that our children do every single day, is developing really strong heart and bones for life, for the next 100 years probably, because these children, 50% of them, will live to be 100. So we need to make them strong.
Beautiful, it really
strong
is.
Strong bodies.
Now, Debbie, apparently you recently wrote a research journal. Tell me something about this.
I did. So this was a couple of years ago, actually, just pre-COVID. It was called The Million Word Gap. And we did a research into literacy in early years. So working with a colleague of mine, and we looked at literacy. We realised that children had gaps in some of the literacy that they were understanding. They didn't read traditional tales anymore. Nursery rhymes weren't really used as much as they had been in the past. So what we decided was, we decided to do a bit of research into this. So we did some research. There was a government document called Bold Beginnings, and in there they had talked about five stories every day. And we thought, well, we'll do a little bit more research into this. This sounds quite an easy thing that we can implement, five stories a day, five picture books a day for every child to read. And it took us to a professor in America called Jessica Logan in Ohio, at University of Ohio. And she'd done a study that said that children who read five books a day under the age of five had a million more words in their vocabulary than children who hadn't read five books a day. So we did a research project on this and looked at our children. We started to read all our children. So we read three at school, and we asked the parents to read two at bedtime. And the vocabulary of those children, it was just amazing. The words they used, I mean, Junior O'Donnell is an excellent example of an author who writes most amazing children's books. But we had children running around outside going, I'm making a cunning plan. And the language and the vocabulary that they were using was coming directly from the books that they were hearing. So now, and we've continued that throughout, now we read 5 stories every day and have seen a massive progress in their literacy development. And of course, that goes on to their writing, their ability to become good writers, their ability to speak and talk and communicate. So yeah, a really fascinating project that we did.
Tell me a little bit about any tips that you might have for parents for those bedtime stories that you mentioned. I'm just thinking that quite often, and maybe I'm just talking from personal experience, putting children to bed can be a very tiring part of the day. It's at the end of the working day, whether the parent's been working in an office or working with children at home as a full-time parent. Quite often, the parent can feel quite tired. Quite often it can be a time of, you know, you're trying to encourage children into bed, getting a bit cross with them as well because they're not doing the right thing. How can parents make the most of that time to really have that, you know, really good quality time with their children to read with them at bedtime?
Yeah, I mean, it is tiring time. I think the listening to a story, the actual, you know, that time for a little cuddle, that quiet time is really good for sleep and benefits sleep. And there's lots of research into how a healthy bedtime promotes healthy sleep. And obviously healthy sleep is what they need to carry on their day the next day. So, yes, I think reading the story, if you can get to read a couple of stories a night to your child, it doesn't have to be very long, you know, kind of 10 minutes, 5-10 minutes. I realise it's the end of a busy day, but actually it's a really valuable time of a busy day. And, you know, it's a very short window in their lives that you actually get to read those stories to them before. I'd say make the most of it when you can and try and, yeah, read a couple of stories a day, even if you've read it before. Most of the stories now, you know, when I think of books, I can probably repeat them off by heart. So just kind of, even if it's the same book that you read yesterday and the day before and the day before, because that repetitive language, and just before you go to sleep as well, repetitive language into the brain just before you go to sleep kind of sticks. And it calms them down. So a part of the bedtime routine, I think, is a must for a story, even if it's 5-10 minutes. So beneficial to them in later life and to them as they're going through school as well.
Great way for the children to go off to sleep. And I'm sure that some of the parents listening to this may have nodded off themselves with their children in the bed for at least 10-15 minutes. Debbie, while we're talking about parents, tell me a bit about how you involve parents in the education of their children or their child and the development that they go through when they're in pre-prep.
Yeah, I mean, we do lots of parent talks, as I spoke to you about earlier. So we've had parents in to see what their children are doing. We do lots of activities that try and encourage parents to come into school. For example, at Christmas, we do a little stick man route around our woods. Now, this came out of COVID. It was a bonus of COVID, I must say. Before that, we used to do a nativity on the stage, and putting 3-year-olds on the stage is a little tricky. Sometimes they don't really want to perform, never work with children and animals, is what they say. And so we thought outside the box. We couldn't get parents in. Obviously, it was COVID. We couldn't get them into a sports hall or anything like that to watch a show. So what we did was we set up The Trail of the Stick Man, another wonderful Julia Donaldson book, where Stick Man, for those that don't know, goes on an adventure. He gets lost and he gets picked up by a dog and he ends up in a river as a poo stick floating down the river. He ends up in the sea as a flag for a castle. A swan uses him for his nest. And then he ends up on somebody's fire at the end and is rescued by Father Christmas. So lovely little story about journeys through seasons, the travelling through and the real emotion and emotive part of the fact that the stick man is lost, his family are missing him, all those emotions, all that emotional intelligence that we're developing through the story. So through the autumn term we do that as a story, and then we invite the parents in to come and do a little stick man trail through the woods where we get the wellbeing dog in. So the wellbeing dog is there as the kind of dog that runs off with Stick Man. We have set up a little beach scene on a tray with some sand and some sandcastles. So all the parts of the story. We even bought an inflatable swan from a well-known online company, but it came larger than we thought. So now we have a giant swan that sits on a pile of lumps.
Oh, brilliant.
And that's a real highlight, because we're always saying, well, we must, now we've not got to look out for the swan, and all the children are looking for a little swan. Of course, this is, you know, like a 6-foot swan that we've got.
Oh gosh, that really is a big swan.
Yeah. And then we wander on through the trail. Our caretaker puts up the snow machine, which is a real awe and wonder moment, because nobody's expecting snow, in, you know. And so the snow machine comes down and we've got to blow up snowman. And then they walk round to the campfire with their stick and their parents. And there we've set up some catering, some hot chocolate around the campfire. And finally, and they all sit around the campfire and have a hot chocolate and a cookie. And finally, the magic Father Christmas appears from out of the woods to come and see them. So the whole story told through a little journey that we involved the parents with. And parents have told us that it's wonderful and they really enjoy it. So, and the children, the awe and wonder and the magic on their face is just amazing. Really lovely to see.
Beautiful. It sounds absolutely beautiful. It really does. Debbie, keeping an eye on time, so we're going to bring this to a close in a moment. But before we go, I'm dying to know, tell me a little bit about how you prepare the children for their next stage in their educational journey at Berkhamsted, and how the work that you do helps them later in their lives at school.
Yeah, I think we've talked a lot about play this morning. So that's the key for lots of the activities that we spoke about. Obviously, it develops so many things. And an early childhood, so there's lots of research into how important the child development is before the age of 5 and how that affects them. Everything we do in early years and at the pre-prep helps develop the person, the child that they become. So not just in future life, but for future education, but in future life as well. Very important that we kind of build those skills early and give them the opportunity to benefit from everything that happens afterwards. So yeah, hopefully building.
Well, it sounds like the children are in a great place for that.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a beautiful place there. It really does. And actually, before we go, just thinking back to, you mentioned that you've been teaching there at the school for 25 years. It strikes me then, if my maths are correct, that some of those early children that you were teaching are now parents themselves, quite possibly. How does that make you feel?
Old. Yes, I see so many people that I've taught in the past that not necessarily all parents yet, but heading that way. Some of them are starting to come through now and coming back to the school. So coming back through the school that they were educated at. And I'm not the only one that's been here 25 years, but many of us remember some of them that came through the prep when we were teaching there. And they remember us as well. It's lovely. One of the firemen yesterday turned up on the fire engine. He went, "You taught me." And I said, "Did I?" You see so many children. It's lovely. You say, "Remind me of your name." And it's lovely to see them. And it's lovely that they remember you. Because you obviously inspired them as younger children, and that they remember you from that length of time.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Debbie, let's bring it to a close. Thank you so much for your time. It's been great talking to you. I really appreciate you giving up your time to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely to talk to you as well, Simon. Thank you.
So there we are. That brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions, please do get in touch with the school. But in the meantime,